And we're talking about miracles, small miracles from beyond. Yita Halberstam with us, co-author with Judith Leventhal. And we'll be back to take your stories and questions next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Yita Halberstam with us, of course. Yita, let's get into a few more little stories, and then we'll get into these phone calls that are lining up for you. This after-death communication is not necessarily a new concept, I don't believe, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, ever since the beginning of civilization, the concept of an afterlife has dominated the cultural and religious thought of the time, perhaps maybe with the exception of the 18th century when there was a zeitgeist of atheism and enlightenment. But basically, every single religion, every culture has really been dominated. It's even said that the physician Galen first decided to pursue medicine as a result of a dream he had, and that was a long time ago. I have it somewhere here, but it's like 156 CE, something like that. So it's not a new concept at all, and there's always cycles in human history, cycles in the 20th century when these ideas dominate, and when people lean towards a spirituality with greater intensity than other times when they don't. And I do think, as I mentioned before, that does seem to be a correlation. It's only human nature that when times are tough, we do seem to cling to spiritual concepts and ideas much more forcefully than when when things are better politically and financially and sociologically, and the world is more at peace. But when the world is so turbulent, is just the things that you delivered, the news that you delivered an hour ago, when the world is so turbulent and so insane,
sure is.
You just want to cling to something that will provide you with a beacon of hope and light.
Indeed, indeed. All right, let's take some calls here from folks. Let's go to Robin in Scottsdale, Arizona, to get things going. First-time caller. Robin, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to share a story, actually, because I had a cousin who had a dream. Is that okay if I do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. A few years ago, my uncle passed away, and he was 80 years old. And when he passed away, my cousin's, his children weren't really sure what to do, whether they should do a burial or a cremation. But they really couldn't afford a burial. It kind of scared them, and they didn't really know what to do. And I called them, and I really wanted a burial too, and I tried to convince my cousin. And after about a week of thinking about it, and after having some phone calls back and forth and a lot of prayers, and it was a really sad time and difficult time, my cousin had a dream where her father came to her and said, "Please bury me, don't cremate me." And so my cousin, because of her dream, it really was very much the deal breaker. She loved her father so much. But money was part of the issue, so I helped her. I helped her pay for her father's burial, and I went to the funeral. And at the funeral, my aunt hugged me, and she said, "God's going to repay you." It's such a weird thing to say at a funeral. And a few months later, I got pregnant, and I was not expecting to have a baby, and at 43 years old. And I calculated the due date, and it was kind of near my uncle's first year anniversary, so I called all my cousins and I told them what was happening, and they were excited for me, but I was kind of scared to have a baby at that age. And exactly 1 year to the date of my uncle passing away, I had a baby boy on my uncle.
Congrats.
Passing away.
Timing is everything, huh?
That's an amazing story. I mean, it certainly sounds like your uncle engineered everything.
I think my uncle did. I named my little boy after him. I didn't know. With an A, Uncle Arnold, and I gave my son a name began with an A.
So. I love that story. Hey, thanks for sharing that, Robin. What do you think of reincarnation? Could the little boy have been the reincarnated
uncle? As you mentioned earlier, or I think it was perhaps on your website, I am descended from a long line of Hasidic mystics. And in Jewish mysticism, the concept of reincarnation is very universally accepted. I know there are some streams of Judaism that do not accept the concept of reincarnation, but Kabbalah and Hasidicism and Hasidic mysticism do. And as a matter of fact, my great-great-grandfather, who was considered a foremost Hasidic mystic in Europe in the mid-18th century, a very interesting story is told about him. I had heard this story a long time ago, but I met up with the story a second time through a coincidence. What happened was I met this man. He invited my husband and myself for dinner, and we were trying to play geography, you know, try to figure out mutual acquaintances,
mm-hmm.
and it just wasn't working. Do you know this one? Do you know that one? Do you know? And we just, no 8 degrees of separation. We were just could not figure, we just couldn't find any common bonds. And then finally he started asking me who my grandparents were and my great-grandparents. And when I told him the name of my great-grandfather, who was this very famous, legendary Hasidic mystic, he nearly fainted, and he said, do you know that my great-grandfather was his assistant? He was like his, you know, his secretary, his go-to person, his, you know, second-in-chief. So anyway, he said, and my great-grandfather, when I was a little boy, told me this story about your great-great-grandfather, and he saw it with his own two eyes, and this is the story. This all connects to reincarnation. And the story is that my great-grandfather never left his study. He would either see petitioners or he would be studying all day long.
He stayed there always, huh?
Yeah, always there, never left his room. And then one day he heard a noise outside his study, and he said to this man's great-grandfather, go see what's going on outside. And the man was very perplexed because my grandfather, great-great-grandfather, never seemed to hear anything or notice anything, and suddenly he was very keenly aware of the ruckus outside. So he went outside, and he saw an old gypsy lady with a dancing bear. In Europe, in the mid-19th century, they had dancing bears, which they took along with them for entertainment and to get, you know, rubles and kopecks. So he went back in and he told my great-great-grandfather, well, it's just a dancing bear. And my great-great-grandfather immediately got up and went outside and approached the gypsy and said, how much do you want for your bear? And this man, this other man's great-grandfather, kind of like his mouth was agape. He didn't know what was going on. And the gypsy said, well, he's very old. He really doesn't have much dancing left in him. He said, well, you know, just tell me what you want. And she told him what she wanted. And he went into study, got a sum of money. He gave the money to the gypsy. She departed very happily.
Yeah.
And then my great-great-grandfather turned to the bear and said, you have danced enough, and the bear just fell down dead.
Wow.
And the story was that...
True
story. He was a reincarnation. You know, my great-great-grandfather believed he was a reincarnation, and it was time to redeem him.
Huh.
And it's a very famous story.
That is amazing.
Different holy books, and... This man told me that he had heard it from his own great-grandfather himself. So, yes, we very much do believe in reincarnation. And there are a few stories in the book about reincarnation. There's a story about a cat that appears at a church. This woman's mother is dying. The woman's mother is a redhead. This is Lindsay Cresswell from England who wrote the story, who told me the story. And Lindsay said to her mother, Mom, if there's any way that you can tell me that you're okay, please, please, I'm begging you. When the mother's dying, and the mother kind of laughs faintly and says, okay, I'll try. And when Lindsay gets to the church, there's a bunch of well-wishers thronged in front of the church. and a red cat, you know, ginger cat, all red. But she doesn't take any note of it. I mean, she just notices there's a cat, but no big deal. And then they go up to the church to go inside, and the cat starts to follow Lindsay inside the church. And everybody remarks on the fact that as the cat follows Lindsay into the church, it looks to the right side of the pews, it looks to the left side of the pews, as if it's looking to see who's there. Then it goes up to the altar, and it goes behind the curtain, and it jumps on the coffin, and then it falls off. And then when the priest finishes his eulogy, the cat is still there. It starts yowling away in a very eerie way. And then it kind of hurtles out of the door. So they figure they're finished with the strange antics of this cat. But as they go the next day to the crematorium, the cat is sitting there right in front of the door. And the priest tells them that the cat has been roaming around the cemetery all night long. And after they were done, the cat started rubbing its feet against Lindsay's father's, the widower's, legs. And it just kind of stuck around and followed them around all day, and then it disappeared. So she was convinced that somehow this was her mother.
You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
That's my most famous phrase, because you really never know. Life is so strange.
Let's go to Richard, truck driving in Virginia now, east of the Rockies. Richard, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, hello. I have wanted to talk to you about this miracle for so long because I listen to the show regularly.
Okay.
And I know that you enjoy miracles, and tonight is perfect.
I love it. Go ahead.
My son, back in 2011, he was 7 years old, and he got sick with HUS, which is a form of E. coli that really just people don't survive. And he spent a little over 30 days in intensive care, and they had to put him on life support. Everything was failing. He was on his way out the door. Me and my wife went down to the chapel, and we let it all out on the table, all our sins, everything, just confessed and prayed to God to help. When we walked back to the room, a local pastor was there, and he asked if we could pray over top of my son. We said, yeah, not a problem. So we prayed, and he ended up finishing and leaving, and we went to sleep next to my son. Well, we woke up in the morning to him being completely off of life support.
Wow.
Eating breakfast, and the doctors said that this just does not happen, and he was fine. They had to sign releases so they could put him in a medical journal. And 3 days later, we were at home, and he's never had an ailment or a problem because of it since.
It's remarkable.
That's incredible. That's an absolutely incredible and amazing and such an inspiring story about the power of prayer.
It works. We do it here, Yitta, on Fridays. We have what is called a prayer session, not to be confused with religion.
Right.
And you know, we have people who will send me emails about afflicted people or things that they want prayer for. And the listeners are supposed to take a little time out of their day on Friday and just do a little prayer. And it works. We get some outstanding and astounding feedback.
I think that's such a beautiful thing to initiate, George. And there is one story in Small Miracles from Beyond that testifies to that, very similar. There was a woman who was driving her car down a highway, and she passed a horrible crash scene. And all the cars, of course, were inching past because there were police barriers set up. And she looked at this mangled mess, and for a second she uttered a prayer on behalf of the lifeless form of the woman who she saw inside the the barn.
Oh, sad.
Please, God, please save this woman. Please help her. And then she inched past, and that was it. And she never knew what happened to the woman. Well, a few months later, she got a phone call, and a woman's voice, an unfamiliar woman's voice, is on the other end and says, is this so-and-so? And she says, yes. She said, can I ask you a question? Did you, a couple of months ago, pass by a scene of an accident and pray for the victim? And she said, yes. How do you know that? And the woman said, I was the woman in the car.
Wow.
And she found her. Yeah, and I felt my body lift up and hover over the scene, and I just, like, watched the paramedics work on me, and I just felt myself being pulled, you know, further and further away, and suddenly flaming letters started rising up towards me, and they were letters from a prayer, and they started to suck me back down, and I recovered. And the reason I found you was because when I was hovering over the scene, I clearly saw the license plate number of the woman who was reciting the prayer. So I have some friends in the motor vehicles department, and I tracked you down to thank you.
That's another great story.
Yeah, it's incredible. These things just blow your mind.
Let's go to Teresa, Washington, D.C. Hi, Teresa. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. I've been waiting also to tell my story for a long time because it was such a miracle in my life. I was raised by my grandmother, and she died just before I gave birth to my first child.
Sorry.
And it was devastating. I wanted her to see my daughter. And I was very upset about it. I was crying about it every day. I was really upset. I was losing sleep over it. And my grandmother had a very distinct personality. She was tough. She had been through the Depression. She rode Harleys in the 50s. I mean, she was like this very distinctive personality. And one night I went to bed and I had a dream. And she came to me in my dream. And it was that personality, and I knew it was her because of that personality. And she said to me, she said, listen, stop all the bawling, you stop all this crying. And she said, I've seen you, baby. I've seen the baby. I see the baby every day. I'm there, and I will always be there. And I knew it was her because of the way she said it, the personality. I knew it was her, and that's actually what we put on her tombstone was always there, because that's what she told me.
That's a great story, too. There's a million of these stories.
Oh, yeah, beautiful, and it's so comforting, and it provides us with such solace. In the Jewish tradition, a lot of us, when we have a wedding of a child, or bar mitzvah or something like that, we take invitations, paper invitations, we bring it to the tombstones of our loved ones who are dead, and we invite them.
You invite them. And I bet they're there. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, I invite you all to watch our television program Beyond Belief, and if you have the capability of getting the internet to your flat screen, you can really watch it. Simply go to this website, www.beyondbelief.com, and you can sign up to watch it free for a while. Beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, final segment with our guest, Yitta Halberstam, and her book, Small Miracles from Beyond. The book's on the market now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It was published about 2 months ago, and we're very grateful. It was named a finalist in the spirituality category of a competition called Books for a Better Life Award, which is administered by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society.
What would you like readers to escape with after reading the book?
To escape? escape with or come away with?
I like escape because they go into their own little world.
I would like them to believe that when we pray, we are speaking to God, and when coincidences occur, it is God speaking to us. And to be very awake and attuned to the messages, and to try to filter them and see if they have any specific, particular, concrete bearing on our life and how we can change our lives. You know, the saddest thing, George, is when a miracle happens and you're not even aware of it.
Yeah.
And it's like it's been wasted. So somebody from Denver once wrote us a story. And the story is that he and his friend were sitting in a pedestrian mall in Denver. And they noted that it was a very stagnant day, not a leaf blew, you know, the trees, nothing, no wind whatsoever. And then they got up from the restaurant, and in the pedestrian mall in Denver, they don't have any cars. There's just a trolley that trolley tracks that bisect the mall. And as they got up, they noticed that on the other side of the tracks, a woman had emerged from a Hallmark gift store with her daughter, and she was immersed in reading the gift card that she had just bought, and she stepped off the sidewalk, and she didn't realize that a trolley was hurtling towards her at very rapid speed, unusually rapid speed. And you know, sometimes when you get so terrified, you become paralyzed. And the men, instead of being able to scream out a warning to her, they just got paralyzed by the sight of her stepping onto the path of this trolley. And all of a sudden, they told us, a wind, a huge gust of wind out of nowhere ripped the card from her hands. She twirled around, ran back on the sidewalk to chase after it. It was skittering on the sidewalk. And then she caught it, and by the time she turned around, the trolley was gone. And they wrote to us, she never knew that this great miracle had happened to her. Where had this wind come from? All day long, you didn't see or feel a ripple of a breeze, and suddenly this wind came and saved her life. They said that was the sad part, and that made them wonder, how often are we, that woman, really caught up in the middle of a miracle but utterly oblivious to it?
I love that. Okay, let's take final calls. They're coming by quickly. We go to Portland, Oregon. Alex, welcome to the program. Alex, you're up with us.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
Great to talk to you, George. Now, I have been listening since I was really young when Bell was hosting.
Thank you.
I still listen all the time. Anyways, to my question, I have a question for your guest. How do you feel about energies that seem to empower us or, you know, make us make our decisions?
I'm so sorry. I can't really hear you that well.
How do you feel, Holly? How do you feel about energy that helps us decide the things we decide? Was that pretty accurate, Alex?
Yes.
Okay, so when you're talking about energy, are you talking about intuition, an insight, a feeling?
Well, more of like an aura or a spiritual energy. I only say this because I kind of have a story about one, and I just kind of wanted to get your feel on it.
Could you please recount the story? Do you mind doing that?
Yeah. Well, I went to see my family in California. That's actually how I grew up listening to the show, was on these road trips.
Mm-hmm.
When I was down there once, my mom lives in an apartment complex next to my aunt. They were having a hard time communicating. They, you know, don't always get along. So I went over to see my aunt, and she was in the middle of a very rough time in her life. She had told me she had been drinking all day, and then she told me she had taken a bunch of pills. And I said, well, you really need to let me take you to the hospital. And so after about a half hour, I finally convinced her to let me drive her to the hospital. A few days later, my grandma took me to this spiritualistic, I guess, psychic. She has a machine you put your hand on, and it reads your aura, and it's called photographing your aura. And from the colors that form around you that are supposed to be around you all the time, but we can't see with our naked eye. She told me a lot about my personality that was dead on without ever even talking to me. And she had said, you will save someone's life someday. And I go, well, it just happened a few days ago. As a matter of fact, you know, no one was going to go see my aunt. No one was going to help her out. And I was able to, and it was all because of these energies.
And, wow. So you are really plugged in. I mean, I definitely, this is not really my forte, but I definitely feel that there are certain people who seem to be more plugged in to a different consciousness.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Right, and have certain abilities that other people don't have. And we use different names to call it the same thing, but some people will call it intuition, or they might call it God. They might call it channeling, you know. But definitely there are many people who are blessed who are highly spiritual beings who are plugged in and can perform miracles for other people and can see things that other people cannot see.
Did anybody in your miracle stories talk about angels as well?
You know, we didn't really have any angels in the story, but there was one woman from Nova Scotia. Her name is Winnie Alley, and she actually woke up one night. She heard a screeching in her room, and she woke up and she saw this young man who she used to work with in Montreal before she moved back to Nova Scotia, and he was there in her room, and she was a young lady. She was like 20 years old. And she said, what are you doing here in my bedroom? How'd you get up here? How'd you get past my parents? Like, she was just screaming and ranting and raving. It didn't dawn on her that this was not an earthly body anymore. And she's screaming and yelling, and he's surrounded by light, and he starts to fade. And then she realizes with a start that this was not this full-bodied young man, but that it was some kind of spirit. So she gets so disturbed that she decides to take the train to Montreal and try to go to her workplace and see if she can find out where he is, because she lost touch with him.
Yeah.
And she's walking across the train station in Montreal, and she collides with a former coworker. You know, what are the chances? And he says to her, did you hear what happened to poor Scott? And she said, no, what happened? He said, oh, my God, he committed suicide on his birthday. And it's the same night that she was visited by Scott in her bedroom.
That happens.
And I have to tell you the strangest story in the book. You know, of course, everybody will have a different favorite, or we'll get the heebie-jeebies from a different story. We're all different. But my favorite story comes from East Lansing, Michigan, from a woman named Joan Otto. She's about 80 years old. She's a pistol. She's a riot. And she is a former newspaper reporter herself, and she's a crossword puzzle fiend. And her daughter, Ruth Otto, was sadly dying of cancer. And she said to her, Ruthie, I know you think I'm a little weird, you know, you're a good-going, church-going Catholic, and you think I'm off the wall New Ager, but can you do me a favor? If there's something on the other side, if you're okay, can you just send me a sign that you're okay? That's all I need to know. And so that I know for sure that it's coming from you, can you send it in a crossword puzzle? So Ruthie kind of laughs through her tears and says, okay, Mom. So Joan Otto goes through the crossword puzzles every single day, and even though they're printed in the East Lansing, Michigan Journal, they come from a syndicated service based in New York. And 6 months later, she's doing the crossword puzzle, and she is having a heart attack because 10, count them, 10 answers in that day's puzzle all relate to her daughter, Ruthie. There's one answer, Ruth, her daughter's name, intersecting with the word Otto, her last name, bumping up against the word okay. Then the word Ernie, Ruth's middle name was Ernestine, and she was always called Ernie, bumping up against a second okay. And it's very rare for two words to be repeated in the same crossword puzzle. Then there's the word wee, W-E-E. She was a neonatal a nurse who dealt with babies that she called wee, the wee ones. Bumping up against the word EMT, she was also an emergency medical technician. Bumping up against the name Ruru, her name was Ruthie, and her younger brother couldn't pronounce it when he was a baby, so he called her Ruru. Bumping up against the word amok, A-M-O-K, which usually means a frenzy, but if you bisect it, it means M-O-K. What are the chances?
Yeah, I know that. Let's go to Jay in Irondale, Alabama now. Jay, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. We're both born in June, George.
I love it.
More in common.
A Gemini.
Yes, 11th of June. And I'm going to shout out to all of our truck drivers out there. I wouldn't want to do it, but I'm glad there are people who do. I recently ran across, this is a war story. This man was telling me, for his name, let's say his name is Steve, that he was going down in a helicopter, and this was in Afghanistan. And his pastor found out after he survived this crash that his pastor's wife came running to him and said, there's something wrong. She started to cite the 91st Psalm, and he said everything that happened in that helicopter before they hit the ground was recited in the 91st Psalm, and he said, couldn't believe it. And I told him, I said, well, obviously, if you believe in an all-powerful, holy God, that his hand was on you. And he told me about some of the other things that he had been through. And there's just no way that somebody had been through what this man has been through without having the hand of God, as far as I'm concerned, on his life. And I'm going to be probably working with some vets here. I'm a vet myself, but I fought a little miniature war in Western Europe on the base we were at, but never got shot at. But that's you were saying there are no coincidences. There's some of the things that I've heard of tonight on your show for the first time, but it is my opinion, and I believe it is in the Word, that once you go to the other side, now I'm not saying that the Almighty cannot send a relative to you in a dream, but this sounds crazy in my short little time here on the face of the earth, but this is the first time I've ever heard of anything like this. Hey, thanks. Have a great one. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you so much.
You could literally write a second book here, Yitta.
You're right. I mean, these are great stories, and it's wonderful to have this perspective validated, because I was a little worried about jumping to this topic, because these are the kind of stories that a lot of people whisper to each other and feel a little uncomfortable discussing because they're afraid that they're going to be considered weird. But actually, I read a statistic, and of course, there are so many different statistics and they're all malleable, but I read that about 60 to 70% of all Americans really do have these kind of experiences, but they're just a little shy about coming out and saying, I have had a mystical experience or a supernatural experience or an experience that logic or reason doesn't really quite explain. But I feel that I've been touched by some sort of grace.
Randy's in Omaha, Nebraska now. We'll get a few more calls in. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, another great show.
Thank you, sir.
Great topic. I was curious if either one of you have heard of the book Black Elk Speak.
Sorry, could you say the name?
Black Elk Speaks.
No, I haven't heard. Is this about a Native American?
Yes. It was a recorded vision in the 20s by a Native American. It was recorded by a white man by the name of John Neihardt. But Neihardt wanted to write about some Native Americans, and he had heard of this Black Elk that had the vision, so he went up to see him. But as part of it, with no telephones and telegraphs, Black Elk came out to meet him. And so that was the initial encounter. But over the years, that book got to be ranked as one of the top mystical or religious books of all times. But Neihardt did go on to write a book. One of his last ones was called Patterns and Coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was alive tonight, he would certainly make a great co-guest. But everything about his life was just unbelievable. He taught himself Greek at 16. So so he could write of the greats. And one of his great books was called Cycle of the West, and it took him 30 years to write that. And it was basically the journey of the human spirit.
Are and, still available in print?
Yes, a lot of his works are. It's John Neihardt. And, but, you know, the other book was, well, Black Elk Speaks, and then he has a number of others. Patterns and Coincidences was the other one. But later in life, he was talking about, interviewed where, you know, commenting on how life was upside down and chaotic and just in crisis, kind of like it is now. And he just said there's four things to remember. One was love. Two is moments of expanded consciousness. And it's exactly what this program of tonight is about. All these moments that we sometimes lose. Anyway, the third was work, and then finally the fourth one is sleep. And
I think he lived until he was like 92 or something like that.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And but the interesting thing is he finally, later in life, he took Blackout to Harney Peak. That's where he had his vision, and Blackout had never been there. But the funny thing is, it was in the midst of a drought. It was just, there had never been rain for months and months. Anyway, Black Elk went up there, said a prayer, and he says, well, maybe if I have a little bit of power, something will happen. Well, it turned out when he was done, it started to rain.
Mm.
And, then, huh. and then it cleared up, and then it was just hot again. But
I love it. You know, we are almost out of time, but I want to thank you for spending a couple hours with us. Thank Judith as well, and good luck with the Small Miracles from Beyond. Okay?
Oh, it has been such an enormous privilege to be on your show, George. You're terrific, and your guests are wonderful, and I can't say enough for this experience. Thank you so much for enabling me to be on your show.
Well, thanks for your work. I really appreciate it myself, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful year ahead.
You got it. Next up, of course, his name is Lionel. No, it's not Lionel Fanthorpe. It's somebody else. He's been on the program with me before, and we're going to talk about some of his incredible work as well. Specifically, also, go up to our website at coasttocoastam.com and participate in the poll on the militarization of police. I'd like to see your results because that's tied into part of Lionel's presentation.